Hello, everybody. My name is Joe Vargas, and you're listening to My Swift Journey podcast, my adventures of becoming an iOS developer. Hi, everybody. This is Joe. It is Tuesday, October 26th, 11:52 a.m. And I'm a little excited because today is my final day on Hitch. I've been working day shift for the past 14 days, so I'm a little excited that today's my last day. It's been about a month since I released episode 10, and since then I've been continuing working on my DevSlopes courses, and I'm still on the Runner app. It's been quite a struggle working on that app. Recently, I started learning how to use user defaults because there's a setting I want to set there that allows a user to choose to view pretty much to view distance in kilometers or meters. I created a settings app in the app that has a segmented controller that you can choose from kilometers or miles. And whenever you choose one, it pretty much updates the entire app globally around wherever you see distance, it'll show it in the unit of distance measured, whatever you choose, kilometers or miles. Again, I was able to implement the segmented controller to the settings view controller and even save the segmented controller's state to user defaults, which I had to learn on the fly. I've used it before. I used user defaults before, but never on a project like this. So to save settings or data to user defaults would be best, because whenever the user chooses to view data in kilometers or miles, the next time they open up the app, I want those settings to load up. And probably the best way to do that, the best and probably the quickest way, would be using user defaults. So again, when the app loads up, it loads up the user's chosen setting of either kilometers or miles. The challenge was that it only loaded up those settings when the user goes to the settings view controller, which is not ideal. I'm currently working on finding a way to load up the settings in the home view controller, and the main view controller, as most people refer to it. I'm still mapping out the functionality in my head, and I'll need to sketch out a mapping, but I'm considering implementing a singleton to have a shared class pass the setting globally, or use a protocol to pass the setting from the settings view controller to the home view controller. So that was a few days ago, per my notes for this podcast, because thankfully today, I have a great update on that I managed to figure out to load the user defaults from the main VC. I was able to implement a function called load user defaults that declares a constant named index, and I assigned it the value of what's stored for the index, which can be either 0 or 1. 0 is for kilometers and 1 is for miles. I moved the load user defaults function from the settings VC to the unit of measure singleton, but this time I renamed the function to load selected UOM and added an argument of type integer. And I called this function load user defaults and passed the index constant, which is of type integer. And after a few builds, I was able to confirm the user's choice of distance unit was loading successfully. So I was able to load whichever setting they chose. And it was like updating across the app, which I couldn't have been more excited about to see happening, because that was killing me for like three weeks, almost 4 weeks. So trying to figure out something that is taking 3 to 4 weeks, it's quite a long time for such a small feature, for such a small refactor to complete. When I started learning iOS years ago, and I would read about somebody creating a Segway or somebody passing data from one view to another. It was kind of hard to comprehend that because I couldn't see it. There was no simulator or a physical iPhone device showing such behavior. I'm a visual learner, and I need to see a video or pictures of what's being talked about. So what I would do for myself is draw pictures. I had this, and this is back in a previous apartment. This is like years ago. I had a dry erase board that I purchased just for this in particular. That way I can draw like view controllers and draw buttons on it and like arrows and just little annotations on it, because I'm a visual learner and that's how I learn. I've always been that way since I can remember. And again, it was challenging to understand what the instructor was saying on, you know, in a book that I was reading, or a tutorial, like a Medium post, or you know, any blog post that showed you how to do something. I needed something to show me. I needed something tangible to see and, you know, write on. So I would create either on paper or on my dry erase board, I would create view controllers. And that actually helped me understand and learn. So I took a few cues from that this time around, and I started drawing what I needed to do for this feature. I grabbed a sheet of printer paper, and I started drawing out the three view controllers. That would be my main view controller, my settings view controller, and my unit of measurement singleton. And I drew the functionality, put some arrows in there, and it allowed me to see, it allowed me to mind dump what I had in my mind, how I saw it work in my mind. But, you know, we're all human. We all have a lot more going on in our heads than, you know, trying to map out a functionality of an app. And this helped me see what I needed to do. And it actually helped me code it out. Like, I drew it, and I actually left it alone next to my laptop, and I went out for a quick walk, for a quick coffee, and I came back. I was a little clear-headed now, and I was looking at the paper, and I was like, okay, the singleton is going to be the hub. It's going to be what's housing not only the save user defaults, but it needs to hold the load user defaults. How can I do that? And, you know, just seeing it in on paper, it allowed me to code it. And within like 30 minutes, I kid you not, after 30 minutes of drawing it out and mapping it and, you know, annotating it and all, I was able to code it in like 30 minutes and I was able to test it. And within like 45 minutes, I was successfully able to determine that what I had coded was going to be able to work. And I did some tests, and when you load up the app, it'll load up the setting that the user saved. When you tap on a run session, it'll segue over you to a details view controller that would also portray the right unit of measurement. And also, when there's an active run session, it would display the distance in the correct unit of measure. So my advice to you, especially if you're starting out, and more so if you're a visual learner, even if you're not, I swear to you that when you draw it out on paper or however you can, I don't care if you're like drawing it on dirt, you know, you just got to visualize, because guess what? Our mind is probably the worst simulator you can ever like run your app on, you know, because again, we all have so much in our minds going on and everything. It's best that you draw it on paper, because it's, again, something you can see. It's tangible. You can like write on it. You can annotate on it. You know, it's probably one of the best ways that I'm able to learn and map out a feature and then code it later on and have success with it. So I highly encourage you, if you're that type of person that has trouble, you can see it in your mind how it's supposed to be, but to actually get it to work, you know, and try and code what you see in your mind, that might be challenging. So I highly recommend that if, you know, you can, you know, get a sheet of paper, a pen, and like just draw it out, annotate it, you know, dump your mind on that paper, on what you want to see in notes that you have in your mind. Don't start in your mind, because it can get lost, and or you can just forget about it, or it just won't work in the way that you want it to. But I swear to you, try it out once. Mind dump the way a feature's supposed to be, or how it's supposed to work, on paper, and annotate it as best as you can, however you want to see it, and then code it out. And I promise you, you will have success. So, moving on to my job hunt status. I recently updated my Dice profile and got a lot of calls from recruiters. Some are sketchy and some are quite legitimate. I'll talk more about why some are sketchy in a bit, but one of the ones that I experience about updating my Dice profile is that I get a lot of emails from recruiters with iOS roles for a senior position, when clearly my profile says I'm interested in an entry or junior role. I got so many of these emails that I began to wonder, is my skill set up to par of a senior developer that I'm getting these emails? I took it to Twitter and asked the question. One follower said to them, and I quote, apply to all of them, end quote. Another follower responded with a statement that stuck to me heavily. He said, quote, a lot of these recruiters carpet bomb email by adding so many email addresses to the BCC, hit send, wait for responses, and then screen by cherry picking the candidates and find the ones that are most qualifying. So that's pretty much like spamming in my book. Recruiters do not seem to take the time to actually look at profiles and send a personal email to the candidates. So rather than continuing to be annoyed, I decided to fight fire with fire. But how? I thought of creating a separate email to use for my Dice profile that when a recruiter emails, they get an auto response with a custom message saying, if the role you're coming to me with aligns with my qualifications, please continue to reach out to me with this address. And I add my primary email address. I brought the idea to a friend of mine who then made me realize that implementing this idea would probably fend off legitimate recruiters who actually send me a personal note. So I gave it some more thought, and I believe I came up with a better solution. Before I get into that, here's a quick word from our sponsor. All right, welcome back, everybody. So the solution that I decided to implement was using, first I had to switch over to another email client. I've always enjoyed using Microsoft Outlook simply because it's just it's a lot way better than the default mail app from Apple. The default mail app that you find in the iPhone and iPad. So I've always used Outlook just because I also use it on my desktop for work. And, I'm very familiar with it. I've used Outlook for many years. But an email client that I discovered a few years ago, and I used it for a while simply because, you know, it was the gestures for the inbox was, you know, something that Outlook didn't have at the time. But the client that I'm talking about is called Spark. It's created by a developer company called Readle. And full disclosure, I'm not endorsed by them or anything. I just like the client. I like the email client. And I'll tell you why and how it helped in my solution here. So Spark allows you to create templates that you're able to summon, or, you know, when you reply, you're able to reply with a template. So I created a template that thanks the recipient who sent me the email, in this case a recruiter. So one of the magical features about Spark is that when you create templates, you're able to add placeholders, and one placeholder would be the recipient's name. When you hit reply, the template and the placeholder actually scans, like, I guess, the original email and looks for a name, the first name of the recipient who sent you the email, it actually grabs a name and auto generates it onto the reply email you're about to send. So in my case, I created an email saying hello, and then whoever the recipient is, I thanked them for reaching out to me, and I informed them that I have attached my email for their reference, and I included my desired salary, a yearly salary and or an hourly salary, and I let them know that I'm authorized to work in the U.S. and I informed them that I'm seeking a role in entry-level junior realm, and I prefer remote work or hybrid with offices in the Houston area. And I asked them if the role that they're currently reaching out to me with does not align with the desired role they're coming to me with, but they happen to come across these types of roles that, you know, I'll be good at, I do appreciate them reaching out to me. And if they have any further questions, for them not to hesitate to email or call me. So that was, I implemented this solution because, again, I get a lot of these emails from recruiters. Again, some are coming to me with senior roles, and some are coming to me that are, you know, roles best fit for my skill set. And rather than me reading all these emails that come in, and it can be either one, it can be for a senior developer, or it can be for, you know, an entry level, junior level. And I just, sometimes I do not have the time to read the description. And so what I do is, when I see that it's an actual iOS developer role, I hit reply. I implement this template, ensure that, you know, the placeholder autofills with the name of the person that they're sending it, and I hit reply. And if they reply back to me, great. If they don't, they don't. The thing is, again, I just don't think that me setting up a Dice profile, the way setting up a Dice profile with my skill set and the type of role I'm putting it all in there on my profile. Like, you know, you don't waste your time sending me an email for a senior role if in my Dice profile you see that I'm qualified for an entry role. But I can't stop them from doing that. They're going to send me the email regardless. So if that's the case, if they're going to waste my time with these types of emails, then I'm going to, in a way, waste their time by sending them this auto reply back with a template. But in a way, I'm not wasting their time, because I'm letting them know a second time, this is what role I'm looking for. This is my desired salary. And if the role that they're coming to me with does not align with my desired role, then, you know, move on. But if they do come across a role that I'd be a good fit for, then, you know, reach out to me. And, you know, here's my resume, you know. So just be aware that no matter where you set up your profile for recruiters to come look for you, be aware that you're going to get roles that, you know, you're not looking for, or roles that, you know, do not qualify, do not match your desired skill set. So I highly recommend using Spark and setting up a template this way. And, you know, using Spark, it kind of like, you know, no pun intended, sparked the idea of creating a Medium post of tools that I use to, work as an iOS developer, or, you know, whether it's directly affecting coding, or if it's just, you know, clients, apps that I use, such as Spark, to help me on a day-to-day basis. So I know I created a post of 8 tips for iOS newcomers a month ago, and I'm considering creating a post that, you know, lists all the apps and the tools that I use on a daily basis, if not weekly basis, as an iOS developer. So I'm considering making a post, so maybe you'll see that soon. So earlier I mentioned that I was approached by recruiters after I updated my Dice profile. And I was approached by some sketchy recruiters and some, you know, legitimate ones. Now, the sketchy ones, and I'll tell you why they're sketchy. It's because I got one in particular, and I have it open here on my phone. The job title is an iOS engineer based in Sunnyvale, California. So everything was looking fine. They put the main responsibilities, the day-to-day tasks that you'll be assigned. And there's a submission template at the bottom. And this is where it gets sketchy. Just right off the bat, they're just questions that they want to know and have you fill out in this template. The first one is legal name on passport. Right off the bat, to me, that's like a little sketchy. One, I'm not going to tell you that. Two, what if, you know, the recipient of this email doesn't have a passport? So next one is email address, which is not bad. You know, you give out your email address anyways when you, you know, apply for a job, so that's not bad for me. Best contact number, you know, same, you hand that out. Work authorization, you know, just, you know, your work status for the country you reside in. LinkedIn ID, not so bad. Date of birth, that right there I would not hand out. If I'm not speaking to the HR of a company, I'm not going to hand you that information. Undergraduate completion year or postgraduate completion year, again, that's, I'm not going to hand that out unless we're actually in an interview with a manager or something. If they ask me, so, you know, we see you graduated this and this, then I'll answer. I'm not going to put that on an email to a recruiter. Skype ID, you know, not bad. It's the same as my email. This is where it gets even more sketchier. The last four digits of social security number. I will not even give you the first one. That is something that you'll hand out to anybody. Not even if it's partial. Not even, you know, I'm not going to hand out one letter, one number of my social security ID. Current location, you know, it's on my resume where I reside. So I wouldn't mind giving that. Relocation, if, you know, yes or no, if you're willing to relocate. Availability as starter for project, that's, I don't mind handing that out. Available for in-person interview, yes or no, I don't mind handing that out. And passport number, that equally goes with my social security number. I will not give you one number of my passport number. So this is just a public service announcement that when you start applying for jobs, you're gonna see a lot of emails like this, and to me they fall under the category of a scam. That's like, you know, back in 20 years ago when email was just a, you know, exploding, and you're getting those fake emails of, you know, some king in Africa was just you know, died and they left an inheritance, and they're asking you for an account number, you know, to send it to. These scammers are getting very creative, and the fact is that they're preying on people like us who are trying to make a living. People like us who are wanting a legitimate job to earn for ourselves, for our family, and here they are preying on people like us. And they're getting very sophisticated, very sneaky, and they're trying to disguise themselves, portray themselves as recruiters, and asking for information like this in an email, just, you know, straight up in an email. And I highly advise, if you're not willing to put any information on a wall in a public place, it's because it's that big of a secret. It's, you know, vital information, personal information. You're not going to put your bank account login info on, you know, a door of a public place. You just wouldn't do that. So why would you want to give it to a recruiter for a potential job? Again, just so many red flags. So I just highly encourage you to watch out. And it all seemed like they are just monitoring Dice profiles or any any like Dice or Career Builder, they're just monitoring these websites, and they're just, you know, acting, disguising themselves as recruiters, and, you know, asking just to see who would fall for it. And again, just something to be very careful about, be vigilant about, and again, do not hand over information unless you're actually, you know, get a job offer and HR, human resources, is asking for this type of information. But again, do not send this out in an email. That's a big no. That is a red flag. Now, I did meet some really nice recruiters along the way, and one in particular, her name was Linda. She came to me because she saw my profile on Dice, and she has this client who is based out in Dallas, and they were looking for somebody with iOS experience and also oil and gas experience. And I'm going on to 10 years of oil and gas experience. And they were looking for somebody who can turn a web app into a native iOS app, because they have employees out in the field who rely on this web app. But when you're out there in the field, and I'm talking about like away from major city limits, in the middle of nowhere, they have little to no internet access. And if they rely on this web app, they need to connect to the web. Now, what do you do if you're on the middle of nowhere and you have no cellular connection? You have no data connection. You can't access that web app. So they were looking for somebody who can turn their web app into an iOS app. That way they can use the app on their phone when they're out in the middle of nowhere, and it'll function just the same. So Linda asked me what my experience is in Swift, and I told her. I gave her the rundown, and I also told her that I'm working on this runner app for DevSlopes, and how I am converting metric to Imperial and back from Imperial to metric, which I can tell by our conversation, it just like brightened her day, because this client with the web app, they need somebody who can convert one unit to another, because this web app apparently is full of readings and conversions. She basically said conversions. They need to convert from one unit to another. And, you know, I understand when you're a tech out in the field, sure, you can pull out, you know, the calculator on your app, on your phone, and do the conversion. You know, so long as you know the formula of what you're trying to convert from to whatever unit that you need. Now, I can understand, like, you know, you get your number, but now you got to pull out your calculator and, you know, punch in the numbers and hit enter, but you also gotta like maybe at one point write down that result and then store it. You know, it's just a hassle, I can tell. And being out, you know, being working with the job I'm at, I can tell that it's a hassle. You gotta like memorize these formulas and everything, and all you want is just a result. All you want is just a number. So to have the convenience of an app on your phone to be able to convert one number to another based on the conversion that you need, you know, I can see the use of an app for this client. And I know that Linda was very genuine when she asked me what I'm working on right now, and I told her about the running app and what it does. And she was like, Joe, how come you don't have that in your resume? How come you don't have that in your GitHub? And I said, well, Linda, you know, I haven't finished it. It's not complete. I usually post my projects on my GitHub when they're complete and they're fully functional. You can download them to your iPhone and you can run it. And she's like, Joe, you know what? I think it would be best if you actually put on your GitHub. That way I can show the client, like, this is what you're working on. And plus, the fact that you're able to convert a unit of measure from kilometers to meter, from kilometers to miles, or back to kilometers, the fact that they're, you know, they're looking for somebody who can convert one unit of measure to another, I think it would be ideal for you to like post that into your GitHub, and so I can show it to them and like to show that you're working on an actual application that can run and can convert data from one unit to another. So on a whim, like as soon as we hang up, we must have talked for a good 25-30 minutes. Typically I talk to recruiters for a good 5 minutes, 6 minutes tops, but her and I, we actually, you know, had a great conversation on what, you know, basically what the client is looking for, and she inspired me to be like, put this app on the GitHub. Even, and she even told me, even though it's incomplete, at least just put like, you know, a disclosure that it's being worked on, it's a work in progress. But the fact that you're able to like right now show that you're able to convert one unit of measure to another, it'll appeal to the client. So again, after, like as soon as I got off the phone with her, I started recording a demo video of the Runner app, and I posted it onto my GitHub. And you know, I put the video, I hosted it on YouTube, and I linked it to my GitHub, and it was available for her to show to the client that, again, I'm able to convert one unit of measure to another.
So that all happened last Thursday. And tomorrow, which is my first day off, I will be reaching out to her to see what transpired from the client. And one, almost forgot to mention that one disappointing thing is that the employee of a client who's spearheading looking for this candidate, they were going to be in the Houston area, even though the company is based in Dallas, but the client himself, he was going to take a trip to Houston. And unfortunately, because of the hours I work, I was unable to at least meet him up somewhere for coffee and discuss with him. And this was all Linda's idea. She brought it up and I couldn't agree more. I just wish my hours were different. I could have met this client for coffee, discuss, get to know him, get to know me, to see, you know, if I'm a good fit. But oh well, we'll see what happens. I'll be following up with her tomorrow, my first day off. And if anything, I'll keep you guys updated and mention it on the next episode. All right, I'm moving on to who you should follow. In this episode, I would like to feature Alejandra Patron. She goes by ale_Patron on Twitter. She is an iOS engineer at Google. She's a tennis fan and plays tennis on her spare time. She's a YouTuber as well with fresh Swift and Swift UI tutorial content in English and Spanish. One of my favorite videos that I've seen is a 10-minute tutorial on fetching data from an API endpoint. It'll be a great resource for when I start building apps that use that sort of functionality in Swift UI. In her YouTube channel, she has links to her Medium, Instagram, and TikTok profiles, so make sure you go check those out and let her know yours truly sent you. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for episode 11. I really am appreciative that you've stuck around this whole time and listened. A matter of fact, I just realized that it's been about a year now since I posted my first episode. I posted it on September 25th, 2020. So it's been a year and a month. It's been quite a journey so far. It's been quite a year, a lot of ups and downs, but I really am blessed to be here, and I'm blessed to have you guys listen to wherever you are listening to this. So, and I highly encourage you to, wherever you listen to this podcast, I highly encourage you to leave me a rating, leave me a comment, you know, what every all feedback helps me grow this podcast. Whatever you want to hear, what you don't want to hear, it all helps me grow. So I highly encourage you to go leave me a rating and a comment. If you would like to follow me on social media, I'll make sure I leave my social media links in the episode details. And if you want to leave me a voice message, I encourage you to go to anchor.fm/myswiftjourney and click on the message button. So I look forward to hearing from you. Again, leave me any feedback, any good, any bad, any requests. I'll surely look forward to listening to them. So until next time, be good to yourself, be good to others. Happy coding.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening to this episode. If this episode brings you any value, do leave a review, and if you have time, a comment. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and will help me produce future episodes. If you'd like to leave me a voice message, which I would greatly look forward to, head over to anchor.fm/myswiftjourney, click on the message button, and record away. I look forward to your messages. Happy coding.